you love takeaway, travel, and international cuisines? Then you're going to love the Takeaway Man podcast. Join Kevin Kerwin, the Takeaway Man, as he searches for the best international food delivery services accompanied by popular musicians, comedians, and artists. But here's the catch. Each guest gets to pick their a food delivery service, order their unique menu items for up to $20, and give a thorough review on it so you can get the best value for your money next time you order takeaway. You can also enjoy the entire experience on Instagram by following at The Takeaway Man. Sit back and turn up the volume because Kevin is here.
Hello and welcome to The Takeaway Man podcast. Today on The Takeaway Man podcast, we have the absolute legend that is Carol Watson. Carol Watson is a global traveler, freelance video editor, master, and absolute thrill seeker. So, Carol, thank you so much for being on the podcast today. How's things? Y'all good?
I'm good, mate. It's great to be here. Thanks for inviting me on. Thanks for buying me a meal.
It's always no worries, man.
Nice. It's like a nice treat, midweek treat. But yeah, like all things, I think everyone's sort of feeling a bit more optimistic and we're getting towards a light at the end of the tunnel now. I mean, who knows? It might be an oncoming train, but still feeling better. Things are looking more optimistic. We were just talking earlier that the beer gardens are open in England, at least.
Yeah,
so that's a start. So I'm good, mate. I'm good. Drink!
The first question that we have is drink. So with drinks and stuff like that, you were the lucky one to go get a couple of pints yesterday. And what drinks are you on today? Are you having any beers or some water?
I just got standard Peroni. I mean, the amount of times I drink Peroni in my life and stuff, I should try and get a deal with them, really. Although maybe it won't be a good thing because I'll become a full-on alcoholic. But I'm kind of like just a sort of a simple lager kind of person. Like I love drinking out, like when you're traveling and it's a sunny day, just having a nice ice cold beer. Like I'm easy to please. Like you get people who like craft beers and into all that.
Yeah.
For me, like craft beers is like you're trying too hard. It's just keep it simple. Just give me a simple lager. You know, I don't want piss water like Carling or anything like that, but just a nice big lager, easy to please.
Good stuff, man. Yeah, no, that's I'm exactly the same. And one thing that like that's my bread and butter is what I drink is generally kind of Heineken's. But because everything has been closed for so long and doing all that stuff, I've dabbled into the world of craft beer. I've gone down that rabbit hole of where things, like, I'll basically explain to you exactly what I have. I'm working with a guy. It's called craftdirect.ie. So I just live outside of Dublin now in the main thing in a place called Wicklow.
In Wicklow Mountains.
Yeah. That's right. Literally me, yeah. So, yeah, I'm based up as like the hills have eyes. I'm that little weirdo fucker up in the side of the side of the mountain. Like all the kind of the beers and stuff like that, it literally is. It's just sort of your Heineken's, Carlsbergs, all that kind of stuff. So I'm after going down this kind of craft beer bus, kind of like what you've just said you hated. But so the one that I have today, it's called Work in Progress. Triple fruited pastry sour.
Wow.
Raspberry, red currant, blueberry, blackberry, and strawberry. Yeah.
Is it okay?
Yeah, I'm gonna spark it now and we'll see how it goes.
Just looking forward to you spitting it out on the screen.
Who knows? Yeah, so it didn't have kind of like a
just throw up and be like, thanks for joining the podcast, guys. See you next time.
Jesus. So this is.
That looks like cider.
Yeah, it's a bit funky, all right.
Well, I like wine as well, but it's just, and like sometimes I'll do a wine tasting thinking I should get more into wine, but then I'm like, that's an expensive, unhealthy habit. I shouldn't get it. I kind of try and not to have it too much, you know?
Yeah. Like where you would have traveled around in like Australia and stuff like that, especially doing it as a backpacker, the word that comes to mind is goon, you know?
I mean, it's funny, you know, you never, it's disgusting, but you never have a bad night on goon because everyone's on the same level, which is just completely fucked. So, you kind of have a nostalgia for it. But I was back out last time, I was in Oz, I was there for a job, but I was in Melbourne and a mate of mine was staying at a hostel. So I went along, he said, I'll come for pre-drinks at the hostel. So I just brought along a pack of beers because they're all backpacking. They had goon. I was like, oh yeah, I forgot. Like, you know, and then, you know, so it was good drinking it for old time's sake, but it's dangerous, you know?
Oh, yeah.
I did have one time actually, another time I was out in Oz, because I did a few trips there for STA. One of the trips was out there with this guy called Jacob, who'd never been to Australia before. And he was like really into his wines, like a sort of like a connoisseur. And I was like, well, you have to try Goon at some point. Like, it's your first time in Australia. He's vegan as well, so I didn't tell him about the fish extracts or anything like that. But we ended up on cruising the Whit Sundays on a boat called the British Defender, which I'd actually been on 4 years beforehand on my round the world trip. Like, by pure luck, pure random luck, we're on the same boat with the same captain, who I've since met up with a few times again since. Like, me and him keep meeting up in the same place unplanned. It's so crazy. But anyway, we were late for the boat because we were out filming something else. So they took us on a speedboat to meet up with the yacht. And we get on, and he's like, right, you fucking cunt, it's going to fucking catch up, you know? And bleep as much as you want.
We literally say as much as you want. It's all
right, good. Well, it's an endearing term in Australia anyway. But so the first thing he made us do, he has like a snorkel, like a bong of goon, and just sort of have a snorkel and just poured goon down, like a whole glass of goon down your mouth. So I did that. So Jacob gets on this boat in the dark, and this guy makes him, like, first time he has goon is down like a snorkel. It's like, oh, welcome to Australia, mate.
And that's the thing, like, because you've done so much traveling, especially with the HKNMY thing, like, I have wrote down here, guitar, drink, cocktail versus 23 pence pint in Vietnam.
Yeah.
So you kind of, like, with your traveling, you've, like, I've seen you drink out of an actual guitar.
We were in Vegas right at the end. So for people who don't know, I did this 9-month round the world trip, Hong Kong to New York. And like, when you're in Vietnam, they have the beer hoi, which only costs like 15p for a glass, because they basically brew it and you have to drink it on the day. They don't put any preservatives in. And so you're just getting drunk, and it doesn't taste too bad. It's not like, oh, that's a great beer, but for the price, I'll take it. But then right at the end of the trip, we were driving across the States, got to Vegas. And I don't know, like, Vegas on a backpacking budget isn't that fun. And we were there out of season, so it was just full of people in town for conferences. So it wasn't like crazy Vegas. It was guys in town, like, I'm here for a conference on packaging. It's like, oh, wonderful. Wow. You know, so we're trying to go out these different bars, and one of these bars, we're just looking at what to drink, and it's like, well, should get a beer? But then you still, everyone's walking around with the big margarita things, but then they have margaritas made out of guitars. And me and my buddy James, I was traveling with, who's like, we have to get that, you know, we have to get that right now. So,
definitely.
And I kept it, I don't have it anymore, but I did keep it. I brought it home with me and had it for a couple of years.
No way,
yeah. But after a while, I was like, actually, this is just disgusting. So, get rid of it, but yeah.
With the likes of your videos and your travel buds, there's one video that I actually love it. Out of all the videos that you have, it's the Amsterdamage video. And like, the way it opens up at the start, I think it was probably one of your first videos that you did.
This is before I had a YouTube channel. So I was just, you know, I was working full-time as a video editor, just doing like the dullest corporate videos you've ever seen in your life. And so making travel videos were just like a way of having something fun and creative to do. And it was like, for me, they're the best souvenir of the trip, because you get to relive the trip. So these videos, the only people I ever thought was going to watch them were just the people who were on the trip and some of their mates. So like that. And the way I started a YouTube channel was, I didn't even know what a YouTube channel was, but on our trip, we had lots of like Aussies and Kiwis over in the UK on like a working holiday visa. So I upload them onto YouTube so they could share them back at home. Didn't have any ambitions and stuff, so I only ever thought like 30 or 40 people would watch it, because it's like, in this video, we're there for like the Queen's Day, which is now the King's Day festival, which is like absolute carnage. But the day beforehand, we bought mushrooms and went to the zoo. You know, and now like 20,000 people have seen that video. And that's like, luckily it's not one of the ones in the channel's got like hundreds of thousands, because it's just, there's like there's no holding back with the jokes or the language.
Really isn't.
And it's funny, because I sort of, there was like nine of us. I was the only straight guy on the trip. So like like four girls and four guys. The four guys were gay. I was the only straight guy. And I'm used to their kind of banter. So I was just putting in all the stuff they were saying into the video because I'm used to it. Then I'd show it to my friends and they were just like, what the fuck is like, not in a homophobic way, but if anyone's watching this and you're eating, put your food down right now. There's one line where one of the guys, we're talking about what happened last night, and I was like, oh, I'll put the camera away because it's turned to carnage. And I was like, oh mate, I heard you hooked up and had a bit of fun. And you went, yeah, I went to this guy's house, had a bit of an orgy. And he's like, I think I still got some semen in my mouth. So. And yeah, I don't know if that kind of thing would make the cut of my videos today, but back then we just, you know.
That's exactly it, because I don't know what way the YouTube algorithm works or anyway. So you popped up and then it was, so, and then I got from you then into the Budgeteers, and then the Budgeteers then, and it sort of snowballed into like, it's very, very easy to go into these like travel documentary rabbit holes and to see everyone's experiences and all that kind of stuff. And then when you go into kind of like the rabbit hole of a pair, like you, I don't know how many videos you have now. You're scrolling anyway. Like
there's quite a lot. I mean, my channel has been going properly got going when I sort of put online the Hong Kong to New York series, which was like autumn 2014. So what we're talking like 6.5 years now. But because I don't do vlog, but most your average YouTube channels weekly vlogs. And so they'll have like by now have hundreds or thousands of videos, but because I do these 45-minute hour long films, there's like comparatively not that many videos for a channel that's been around that long, but I've done enough trips now that there's a whole, I have an ultimate binge playlist that people
can watch
it all in order if they're really keen or really bored and stuff. And the channel's actually been booming during lockdown because people want to, you know, they want the escapism and stuff like that, and they need stuff to binge watch. And one of the few, most other travel channels are sort of like the pandemic's hit them really hard because they haven't been able to upload new content. Whilst for me, because it's more sort of rather than just quick throwaway vlogs, they're more, you know, this higher production value. Not saying I have to pat myself on the back, but that's just there is.
Great old facts, man. Like,
So people just sit down, they watch them, and you know, I've even been rewatching some of them myself, just sort of as during like sort of the lowest bits of lockdown. I'm like, oh, I'll just take me back to Central America, and I'll just put that back on for like, you know, a couple hours and just escape, you know.
Oh, defo. And there's another yoke. Well, I think probably one of the best storylines that you can have, and it's for one, it kind of blankets everything, is that where you were in Norway when it comes to the snow and the Star Wars thing. And then out of nowhere, fucking Mark Hamill just tweets it. Like, where did that come out of?
This, so put this in context for the people watching and listening to this. I was invited on the press trip where it's organized by Shackleton Whiskey, which is named after Ernest Shackleton, who's the Antarctic explorer from way back when. And basically he was famous because his ship got stuck in the ice and his whole crew got stuck there. So him and two other people took like a little rowboat and sailed across the most dangerous sea on the planet, got to the wrong side of an island, had to climb over mountains and glaciers with just their basic clothes, but managed to get to this town and got back and rescued all of them. And then I don't know, 10 years ago or something, people went back to one of his stations and found some of the whiskey frozen in the ice.
No way.
They got the whiskey out and they've recreated the recipe. So as a promotional thing for this whiskey they're bringing out, Shackleton Whiskey, they went to this place in Norway called Finster in Norway, which is where Shackleton had trained for his Antarctica expeditions. It's where everyone goes to train for Antarctica expeditions. And so they brought me out there as the YouTuber. They had, you know, journalists for the Times newspaper. They had like bloggers, travel journalists, just everyone. They even had a film crew shooting a proper advert for the whiskey. And I was like, oh, what do you guys want me to do? They might just do your thing. I'll just make a travel, you know, whatever you want, whatever you need from us, just let us know. But it also, the fun fact about this location was it's the location of Hoth from Empire Strikes Back in Star Wars. Like they stayed at that hotel. There's only one hotel. They stayed there and all the Hoths shot there. So, and we were doing, you know, cross-country skiing, dog sledding. But one of the things we did was we dug a snow hole and slept in it for the night. And we were being trained by, there's these two guys that had recreated Shackleton's trip and done the same trip he did in that little boat across the sea and used the same gear. So these guys were proper experts training us. And but at the hotel, they sold these hoodies saying, visit Hoth, like in the Star Wars writing. So I bought that and I'd taken a photo of me by a snow hole. And the weird thing about this trip as well, it was like a sort of snow survival luxury because you sort of out cross-country skiing, go back to the hotel, have a four-course dinner, then go out and sleep in a snow hole for the night, then go back. So I got the photo, went back to the hotel, got on the Wi-Fi, and I was like, you know, Mark Hamill has a reputation of replying to fans. But it's usually just like, oh, hey, can you say happy birthday or some shit?
So yeah, yeah, yeah.
I was like, this is pretty unique. It's like, so I just sort of tweeted him the photo, said, oh, Mark, I'm about to spend the night in Finster, brackets Hoth. Do you have any survival tips? And then 15 minutes later, he replied saying, avoid any Wampas, which is the creature that killed him, nearly killed him, captured him in Empire Strikes Back. And we were in the hotel restaurant when it happened. I just suddenly my phone went, bzzz. I was like, guys, like Luke Skywalker's just text me. And everyone's like, what? And like, there was our group, there's like, I don't know, 40 other people in the hotel, and the whole place just stopped. And I was like, and no one could fucking believe it. Like,
legend, you know,
survival tips by Luke Skywalker.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's like, just take out your lightsaber, chop off his arm, and like, oh, so mate.
It was funny because then, you know, I had the meal, and then we had to go out and actually spend the night in the snow hole, come back in the morning, get back on the Wi-Fi. And I just got millions of notifications from, because every star, everyone who follows Mark Hamill can see if he replies to someone. So it's got like thousands of likes. But then basically every Star Wars fan had their own kind of nerdy survival tip. Like, you should meet me. You know, I say nerdy. I'm a giant fucking nerd myself. I'm wearing a Lord of the Rings t-shit right now. But it's still, it was just like, it was so bizarre. But just, it's kind of like, I guess the icing on the cake for that trip was just like, Luke Skywalker. And one of my cousins is like the biggest, most diehard fan ever.
Yeah, yeah.
Found out, he was like, you fucking bastard.
Oh man, that stuff, like, that's the thing. Even when you were in New Zealand and stuff like that, like, to do the whole Lord of the Rings, even though I know you're a major Lord of the Rings fan.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, was that one of the main reasons why you keep on going back?
It was, but the thing is, it's one of the things that motivated me to go there in the first place. But to sort of use the same expression again, it's kind of, New Zealand's such a great country that the Lord of the Rings stuff ends up being the geek icing on the cake.
Yeah, gotcha.
Sort of, it kind of, it's what drove me there. It's like, oh, you know, I've been obsessed with these movies, learning so much about them. Looks like a cool country, so I'll go and do a working holiday visa there. And I'd been to Australia when I was like 6 years old, so I was like, I'll go to Australia as an adult and see it again on the way.
Cool.
Then go to New Zealand. So it's what drove me there. But then you get to New Zealand, just realize just how beautiful it is, how much there is to do. Like every little tiny town and village you get to, there's like a huge list of activities you can do, crazy stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's so unspoiled and so beautiful that you go for a hike in the mountains and you won't see anyone else all day. So it's just
class.
But that's what keeps me going back there. But then it does have the geek bonus stuff.
Yeah.
Well, like if it was just the Lord of the Rings stuff, it'd be like, all right, I've done that now.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
But it's just more, that's just more like the advantage of sort of, it's a nice treat. I mean, I remember actually the last time I was there, 2017. So I did a road trip around the North and South Island. And on the South Island, I'd had like a bump in my car, like, because I'd parked illegally. I didn't realize I'd parked illegally, but I had. So technically I had to pay for, like, someone had hit it, but it was technically my fault. And so I found out the rental company and they said, oh, well, that probably costs, you have like a $500 excess. So it's, so when I gave them the car back at the end of like the South Islands, they charge you $500 and they say, if it's going to cost less than that, we'll refund you. And I'm on the ferry back to Wellington for my last two nights of the trip. And on the ferry, they just I got the message saying they fully refunded all $500 because they just realized, oh, fuck it, that bump's fine. It's just not going to, you know.
Yeah, it's not going to affect the car.
No point fixing it. But in my, because it had happened 3 weeks beforehand, in my head, those that $500 was spent. So in my head, even though maths doesn't work this way, it felt like I just made $500.
Exactly. And it's so true, especially when you're traveling.
The next day, we went to do the movie studio tours where they made Lord of the Rings.
So I know where this is going.
In my head, I just made $500 and now I'm in the Lord of the Rings gift shop. I was like, right.
Happy days. Well, oh, that's class.
Deal, no deal.
So the next question we have is deal or no deal. So what kind of combos did you get in your food that you got today?
I didn't sort of go for a specific deal because I usually find, the menu's right here, but I don't want the combos. But what I went for was, I went for the, how do you pronounce it? The aromatic duck.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, aromatic crispy duck. Because that reminded me of when I was in Beijing and we went to like a really nice restaurant and they had like all the ducks on the fire and we had it there. It was just, and it had the had like one of those tables that turns and it so reminds you, like, you know, the start of Temple of Doom.
Oh, yeah.
Jones, where it's like, no, Dr. Jones, that's the antidote. You know, it was like that. So I got that. And then the other one I got was sort of Hong Kong style sweet and sour pork because they had. Our trip started in Hong Kong, but when we got into mainland China, to Guilin, the first meal I had at the hostel was sweet and sour pork and rice. And it was like, I still have never found it as good as that hostel. But I still always go for it. So
yeah,
I thought those would be two good ones sort of travel related to get rather than just, hey, this is the Domino's.
Like that's the thing. When I was in Mexico, we went on an excursion and it was like go snorkeling and do all that kind of stuff. It was like, oh, cool. And it's like lunch provided. And you know yourself when it comes to these like excursion lunches, it's like, it's a bit dodge. But the boat driver was like drinking a Corona and he was like making this guacamole stuff as he was driving and drinking and mashing it out. And he was like, hey man, do you want a Corona? I was like, yeah, cool. So I'm having a Corona with him. And then he like made the best guacamole I've ever had in my entire life. Now I don't know if it was because it was in Mexico or whatever was happening, but still to this day, like I get guacamole and I'm just like, oh, it's not the same. It's just not the same.
they are hit and miss though when you do those boat trips or day trips. Like sometimes like, you get food included and you're like, you shouldn't have, like, really, you shouldn't have. But other times it's just like, you just spoil rotten with it. So it's always a roll of the die. But like, I guess a top travel tip is always bring snacks just in case.
Yeah.
in case the food shit, but yeah.
The next one we have here is Hometown Heroes. So for this then is, what is your favorite restaurant, takeaway or food truck that you've had? Now, for you, it's going to be a bit kind of different because you've traveled so far. The way I'm kind of going to spin this for you is there a restaurant that in any country that you've ever been to that, you know, as soon as you fly into this country that you're going to have food there? Is like...
That is a good question. There's one that always comes to mind that James and I went to in Japan. We were in a little town called Hakone, which is by Mount Fuji. And if I went back to Japan and to Mount Fuji, I would definitely go to this place. But basically, to see Mount Fuji from this town, you buy this loop pass, which has like a bus, a pirate boat randomly, a cable car, another cable car, train, backgrounds. So you get all these views of Mount Fuji, you flute back around to town. And so we did that loop and it was cloudy, so we didn't get to see Mount Fuji that day, but the loop lasts 2 days, so we saw it the next day. But anyway, we're drinking some beers along the way. We're like, well, let's just have some beers and see if the clouds clear. And they didn't. But by the time we got back to the town, we were dying for a piss. And so it was like 3 p.m. We're just walking, we just see a sign saying Japanese beer and barbecue up there. And it's just sort of like this little hut of a building. So I will go in and buy a beer so we can, you know, use the toilet. And then they were like, oh, do you want some food as well? I'm like, yeah, why not? We could eat. And one of those ones where they have you actually cook the food.
So oh, yeah, yeah.
Barbecue on the table. Like, they prepare the meat, they season it and all that. And so we're like, yeah, we'll get some beef. And then brought it out and we started cooking it. And we had a bit, and we're like, oh, my God. You know, it's the cliche melted in your mouth kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so, like, well, we'll have another beer and bring us some more. And we just... we stayed there for like it's in the video. We stayed there for a few hours. So that's one of those ones where I'd sort of definitely. I think it's sometimes the simplest ones are the best as well. You know,
oh, big time.
Man. I went to like a Michelin star restaurant on a press trip in Barcelona, and that was great. But that was cool because I'm not like a huge foodie, so I wouldn't have gone and spent that money. But it's great just because it's more of an experience.
Yeah,
bringing out all these random dishes, you don't know what the fuck it is, and it all looks fancy, but you try and it tastes nice. And
yeah,
and that, yeah, it's a press trip, so they were footing the bill. So I was like, yeah, yeah, I'll have some more wine, you know,
steaks, wine.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that happened to me. I was in Madrid, and we went into it was the same. It was kind of like a tapas restaurant, but it was a Michelin star one, and it was like, all, you know yourself, when it comes to tapas, is all these little mini bowls are being brought out or whatever, and I just went, oh, this looks lovely. Big spoon into the mouth, and it was like fucking squid ink something. And I was like, fuck. Really fancy restaurant. Can't do that. And I was just like,
yeah.
And everyone's like, do you like that, Kev? Yeah. And I'm like, yeah, it's lovely. Yeah. Like, can I get another beer here, please? And your mind's like, that. I was like, like just sinking pints. Fly to the moon. So this section is called Fly Me to the Moon. Yeah. And with this, it's just sort of like tips and tricks that you've acquired over the years. It could be to do with traveling, and it could be to do with kind of restaurants and any of that kind of stuff. But one thing that I kind of wanted to talk to you is kind of like, that's the main question. But the other question is how come you never put in any of the airports in any of your videos?
I do sometimes, but I do more nowadays, but it's just sometimes it's like, all right, it's the airport, we get it, just move along with the story. I prefer, like, so for example, the Quest for Everest series where Chris and I went to China, into Tibet, Nepal, and then went back to the Everest Base Camp. We filmed the intro to the series at the airport bar. Most of my videos is me sitting on my couch at the start introducing.
Yeah.
But I much preferred shooting at the airport because it feels more immediate and stuff like that. But at the airports, you get delays, or there'll be background music or too noisy or whatever. And so you end up just not getting that footage. So so I ended up just going, oh, fuck it, I'll just do the intro in my flat. And, it's the same each time, but fuck it, it's controlled. So I'll sort of show the airports when there's like delays and stuff, and it's nice kind of shooting the airport pint, but it's... it's just, it always just depends about it depends on two things. It depends about pacing the video, because sometimes I'll shoot a bunch of stuff at the airport, you come to the edit and go, actually, let's just get on with the story, it's you know, people have been to airports before, you don't need to see it. Or it could just be I'm knackered and it can't be, can't be bothered. But yeah
like what I've kind of found is that, like, not that every airport is the same, because they're all completely different, but there's a million and one videos of, I'm on my holidays to Spain for a week. And you're like, here's me video taking off, and here's me video landing. And then you're just kind of like, all right. That, it's
nice that I always have a quick shot or something, just because it's nice showing the journey, like from where you live. It's nice showing how the world's connected, which sounds a bit corny, but it's like one of our series we did, like, called Backpackers of the Caribbean. James was doing like 50, ended up doing 20 months through Central and South America and stuff. And so I flew out to meet him in Panama, to a place that we'd been to on our previous round of world trip, this little island. So I flew London, New York to Panama City, then Panama City to this island.
Wow.
And so I literally had there's this montage in the video at the start of me walking out the front door, closing the front door, getting on the tube. And she said, and it just shows how it's all, and I love little things like that to show how it's all connected. But then at the same time, you get some people going, right, we're just on the plane now. Oh, they've brought our meal out. Oh, it tastes like, oh,
Good luck.
I've clicked on this video to experience Panama or Thailand or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Not to see what your airline food's, you know, like.
Yeah.
And get on with the story, you know?
Big time. And do you know what? Another thing that that I've seen that you do is you get the bus of like a serious amount, man. Like me now, I'm just gone 30. I don't get a bus into town. And you're like going, just book the 12-hour overnight bus. Can't wait to do that. Are you still doing that? Or
it's my least favorite form of, like, if it was up to me, I love trains, actually, because trains, I mean, obviously planes get on with it. So if it's a long distance, don't fuck it, get on with the plane. But if you're on the train, you actually get to sort of see the landscape you're going through. But with the train as well, you can actually get up, walk around, go to the toilet, have a beer, whilst when you're in a bus, you're stuck there. So it's sort of, it's not sort of like my recent, most recent Vietnam trip. It was more just by necessity rather than choice. So it's sort of, it's just, but and I try and avoid overnight journeys because everyone's always like, oh, it's great because you save on accommodation. It's like, yeah, but you don't fucking sleep on them, you know? And so it's like, if you travel overnight, you got to still have to check out the hostel in the morning. Then maybe you can dump your bags, maybe you can not. But then you can never really settle into the day because you know you're going to have to come back and get the bus.
Yeah, yeah.
Then you get the bus and you don't sleep that well, even if you fucking take Valium or whatever. Like, because sometimes the buses are really comfy, but the roads will be shit, so you just be bouncing around.
So one or the other.
You arrive at the hostel, you can't check in yet, so then you sat around till 2 PM. So you just waste 2 days. But if you travel during a day, you know, you can have a good night's sleep in your hostel, get on the bus and actually see the country you're traveling through because it's not nighttime, and then get there at like 5, 6 in the evening and then have a shower and get back on the beer. You know?
So, yeah, yeah. One thing that I've noticed with your videos is that you don't actually kind of take photographs of creepy crawlies considering you've been all over the world.
Yeah, they're in there, but it's sort of, I guess... I mean, the shots are in there, but we don't make a big deal out of it because I don't get that free. I'm the kind of person where if there's suddenly there's a huge spider up there, I'd be like, oh shit! But then I'd be like, oh cool.
Yeah.
But I guess it's almost like because I speak to some people who go like, oh, I'd never go to Australia because there's just snakes and spiders everywhere. I'm like, oh, shut the fuck up, just go. It's amazing, you know. You'll be fine, you know. So do you know how many people die from it per year? No one. So just, you know.
Yeah.
So I kind of don't want to play it to stereotypes with it. But I'll show it every now and again. There is a bit on the Everest base camp trek on the first night where there's a spider on outside the window of one of the girls' rooms.
Oh, good luck.
We filmed that, everyone freaking out about it. And there's this guy, Ben, who's a proper sort of bogan Aussie dude, like hilarious, kind of like an Aussie Seth Rogen. And I'm like, Ben, you're from Australia. You're a spider expert. What do you know about this spider? And he goes, well, they're pretty dangerous. They can eat through glass, so you have to watch out. He's talking shit. He's just lying to the girls, but, you know.
That's the thing. Like, you say that to me, and I'm like, bugger, gone. Out the window. See you later. Yeah. See you later, Mr. Spider-Man.
One of those press trips with STN Australia, there's this girl, Niobe, who was filming for the day, and her day was about conservation. We went to this turtle sanctuary. And I remember on the flight out, there's 4 of these competition winners and me flying out. And they were like, oh, what about snakes and spiders? I was like, look, you might see a spider, but it's just going to be on the web. It's not going to do anything. And you're not going to see a snake. Your snakes hear you coming and they hear the vibrations and they fuck off. So you're not going to see a snake. Day one with Niobe, we sort of did a turtle sanctuary. Then you go for this little walk in a jungle following like a popular footpath. She went, oh my God, there's a snake. I'm like, I'm pretty sure it's not a snake. I'm pretty sure it's a oh fuck, it's a snake. It's like, snake. I mean, again, it's just there on the rock, not doing anything and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It's sort of it's and again, it's stuff like with sharks. Like people get terrified about sharks, but again, the stats are fine with it. I mean, I remember when I did my first backpacking trip. You know, I did the working holiday New Zealand, but the start of it, I was in Australia for a few weeks. First thing I did was do my paddy and learn how to scuba dive.
Oh, cool.
Which I thought I was going to nail because I've always been a good swimmer and I love swimming underwater. So I thought this can be piss easy. And I did all right when we trained in the pool. But as soon as we got out in the open water for 3 days, I realized I wasn't used to, you know, even though I traveled a lot as a kid, wasn't used to being out in open water, really. As soon as we got in the open water, I just started freaking out. And I really struggled with it. But then, you know, you have the 2 days out in the open water, and then you sort of pass your paddy, you got your certificate, and then you get to go just for a dive with your dive buddy. And it was kind of like the difference between when you're learning to drive and actually driving. Like, learning to drive sucks because you're just parallel parking and doing all this shit, whilst driving normally is just fun.
Yeah.
Same with diving. It's just like, well, you just go explore and go, oh, cool, a turtle, rather than, you know, take your mask off and take this shit off and do all. But then we got to nighttime. We had a night dive. And we were all shitting it.
Really? Yeah.
Like, it's like you're in the middle of, you're out in the Great Barrier Reef, so you're in the middle of like the ocean. It's pitch black everywhere. You're on this tiny boat, and they want you to dive in the water. And you're just like, there's no way. Like, we're all just freaking out, like, so nervous about, like, what happens if we see a shark? What happens if we see a tiger shark? There are some tiger sharks in the area. What, you know, and every instinct in your body is saying, don't jump in that water. It's pitch black. Yeah. You don't know what's down there. And our guide, he said, because you have a torch, but you also have a glow stick to go on your scuba tank. And he said, right, we're going to go in a triangle formation. So I go at the front, and then we'll sort of follow me like that, and we'll go around. And someone went, all right, but what happens if we see a big shark, like a tiger shark? And he goes, all right, if we see a tiger shark, this glow stick's me. You form a circle around me, so you guys get eaten, and I get back to safety. And we're all just like, you know, he's winding you up, but you're like, shut the fuck up.
Oh, man.
And then someone else went, no, but seriously, what happens if we see a big shark? And he's like, well, look, all right, seriously, that if you do get bitten, try and unclip your equipment, because it's very expensive and it can float back to the top. So he just knows there's no worry about the sharks or whatever. But he says, what? And then we got our equipment on, and it got to the side of the boat. I'm about to jump in. And again, just pitch black. And I just sort of, there's a different guy next to me sort of telling me when to go. And I just looked at it. I was like, and this is like day four of my first big backpacking trip, you know, inexperienced with this kind of adventure travel. And I was like, dude, I don't think I can do this. And he went, trust me, mate. It's amazing. It's super chill when you get down there. You're going to love it. Just go for it. All right, fuck it. Jumped in, went in. It was the best experience ever. Like, we saw all these different kinds of fish you see during the day. We did see a reef shark, but we just followed it around with our torch. Just like, oh, cool. But then they had that phosphorus plankton, that stuff that when you disturb it glows and sparkles.
No way.
Imagine you're swimming. It's like the only light's coming from the boat and your torch. So you basically, it feels like you're kind of floating in space. And you're doing this, and so you got all these sparkles around you.
That's class.
Just like the most magical experience, one of the most magical experiences I've ever had. And it was so good to have that at the start of that 6 month trip, because I had a moment where I nearly bottled it, but I went for it, and it turned out to be the best. So any other time on a trip where I was nervous about something, I was like, just go for it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a long story. That's a long segue from creatures, but
no, it's perfect. And it actually, there is a bit of a flow to it, because that's one thing I did want to talk to you about was the, I don't, hopefully, like, there's no panic attacks or any of that kind of stuff, but like with the bungee jumps and the dives and all of the stuff that you've done. Yeah. And it's like, I think at one stage you were like, you did 3 bungee jumps, and then it was like the next day you jumped out of a fucking plane, and then like, because from watching your videos, it does all kind of mash up into one amazing adventure if you were to do it. Like, one thing I just wanted to say was, when you do a bungee jump, do they reel you back in like a fish, or do they lower you down?
Well, how do you mean? Like, how did they bring you back up? Or
that was one of my biggest fears. Is that, so when you jump, you're just going to be left dangling, and they're just reeling you back up to the top.
There's different ways of doing it.
Okay.
The jump. So, the 3 I did in one day in New Zealand, because I was like, oh fuck it, if I'm going to do it, let's just go all in, you know. And and it's weird because you're standing at the edge and you're seeing other people doing the jump, and this is a few days beforehand. And you go, oh, that's not that high. But then when you're up there and you have to jump, it's fucking high. Like,
yeah,
you want to jump off this. The first one is over a river and you sort of bounce, and then they come out in a boat and you grab a pole and they lower you into the boat.
Okay.
The second one, the Nevis one, which is the really high one, you're attached by not just the legs but also the waist. And basically when you do the jump, bounce up, come down, when you're at the top of your second bounce, you reach up and pull a little string and it releases your legs and puts you the right way up.
Oh, okay.
And then another one, the third one I did that day, the ledge one, you're not tied by the feet, you're only tied by the waist, so you can just do a run and jump, which you think's way easier, and it is, because there's no scary build-up, there's no tip-top. It's like, right, here we go, way! But then when you go feet first rather than head first, that's when you get the stomach thing.
Oh, okay.
So, like, when you do it feet first, subconsciously you know you're tied to something because you're all tied up. This literally just felt like I jumped off the mountain. So I was like, last one of the day, here we go, da-da-da-da, jumped, and yet you hear me in the video go, fuck! with that one, they lower down a rope with a clip on, and you clip it on, and it brings you back up.
Oh, okay.
And before you do the jump, they say to you, we need to see you do this so we know you can do it. And when you're there beforehand, you're like, yeah, fine, easy. But when you're dangling there, it comes down, you're like, so it's different every time. The one I did in Africa, in Zambia, Victoria Falls, you're kind of dangling, and then some guy sort of kind of comes down on this rope, and then he sort of gets to you and then clips onto you, then pulls you upright, and you go back up with him.
No way.
It's different every time.
Oh, is it, Jay?
Yeah.
How limited are you when it comes to your injuries that you've had? And does it affect your traveling insurance going forward?
It hasn't affected my travel insurance. Well, I don't think dislocated shoulder counts as a pre-existing condition. I think, especially because like the first time I dislocated my shoulder was in Italy, and then I went for all the checkups when I got home, and they said it won't happen again, and it didn't happen again for like 5 years.
Oh, cool.
In that space of 5 years, I did all the bungee skydives and everything, and then it just popped out again skydiving. I was like, oh, fuck's sake. I don't think I will skydive or bungee jump again, but I've done enough. I feel like I've done enough of them. Like, I've literally got the t-shirt, you know, and I've done like 5 skydives and they're great. I think if I was doing another skydive, because they said to us afterwards, oh, if we knew you had a bad shoulder, we could have told you what to do, which is probably just keep your arms in the whole time. But I'm sure if I did it again, I would just spend the whole time worrying about it rather than enjoying the dive. So I'm kind of just like, just done with it. Because when it popped out, skydiving was Australia 2017, and then I was back out there 2018 filming more stuff for STA and filming this guy doing a bungee jump. And they signed me up for the bungee jump as well. But then I got there and I was just like, I said, oh, can I change mine to tomorrow? Because I just want to focus, rather than worrying about it, I want to focus on filming. And I went, yeah, no problem. They just changed the computer. And then when I was up there filming him looking over the edge, I was just like, you know what? I'm done. I'm done with these. Like, I've had my fun with the crazy. Yeah, I've done enough. And they were awesome and are amazing, but I can't be bothered with like the stress beforehand. And you get the amazing adrenaline buzz afterwards, but it's like, I feel like I moved on.
And
people watch it, get people who don't do any of that kind of stuff, they sort of go like, oh, you're an adrenaline junkie. Whilst if you meet an actual adrenaline junkie, they'll go, you're fucking doing a bungee jump. All you have to do is, adrenaline junkie is like a base jumper or a snowboarder going down a mountain or a surfer in giant waves. I'm just jumping off a thing tied to a safe bungee. I'm not doing anything dangerous, really.
Like, yeah.
Statistically, I'm not doing anything dangerous. Proper adrenaline junkies do dangerous stuff. So I was never that. And so I just feel like it's like, yeah, I'd rather just relax rather than stress myself out for the day.
Yeah. Like that's it, man. And like when you're going in and you're signing up for these kind of excursions and stuff, one of the funniest things that happened to me excursion wise was, we were going up the side of a mountain in this safari kind of thing. And it was in Thailand, and on the flyer, I had on the flyer, I had like people holding spiders and holding snakes and all this kind of stuff. They're like, oh, the first place that you go to, it's going to be a waterfall, and you get to see the waterfall and everything's going to be great. So I'm grand. And I was like, oh, they're like, oh, we're going to go on an hour long drive now. So if you need to go to the toilet, make sure you go to the toilet now, because we won't have another place. So I'm like, bang on, go to the toilet. And I run down the little hill, like where the mountain is, and everyone's there holding this snake. And they're like, oh, the snake, the snake is there. And like, oh, cool, and whatever. And like, class, happy days. It's the snake from the flyer. Clearly looks like the same fucking snake from the flyer. And anyway, so I go walk over and they're like, oh no, Kev hasn't held the snake yet. And I'm like, oh, cool. So they hand me the snake and I'm fucking milling the thing around like a slinky. And I'm like, oh, this is deadly. And yeah, that's great. And whatever. And I turn around to the rep guy and I'm like, hey man, here's your snake back. And he's like, oh, that's not my snake. And I'm like, sorry, what? And he's just like, he's like, oh yeah, no, that's not my snake. And I was like, well, whose fucking snake is it? It's on your flyer. Like, clearly it's your snake. And he's like, no, that's a wild snake. You could just put him back on the tree. And I was like, what? And the way I mean, like, I was going full Steve Irwin with this thing. I'm like replicating it.
I'm like, with snakes, I mean, I'm not a pro at all, but I just know because someone said it in a video clip that I edited, that like the ones that are in zoos are used to being handled, so they don't give it. If you were to pick up a wild snake, it'll just bite you.
Yeah, like this thing. So, and that's the reason why, like, it was wriggling to try to get away, and I just went full on Steve Irwin. I'm like, oh, like your man from the telly, and they were just like, oh yeah, you can just stick him back on his tree now and he'll go away. And I'm like, okay, and I like put him on the tree and he just went off his merry way and had the crack, like. But
it's really is, I mean, I'm saying, you know, I'm not going to do bungees or skydives anymore, but it's important though to make it is good to do stuff that scares you whilst you're traveling. Like, you know, you're not going away to sort of make yourself shit your pants, at least less with food poisoning, but it's good to push yourself. And like I said earlier, that scuba diving story, it sort of gave me confidence to do way more. So it is good to challenge yourself, push yourself. And if you are especially traveling for the first time, then yeah, fucking go do that skydive. But for me, it's sort of like, it's like, all right, I've done enough of them now. I can now do, you know, it's like for me now, I still love hostels for the atmosphere, but I'll stay in a private room so I can get a good night's sleep, you know?
Yeah.
And I can afford it now because I'm older. So it's like, I've earned my stripes. I can, I can have a good night's sleep now, you know?
Oh, big time. So there's SDA Travel, Intrepid, and then Traverse. But all of your stuff that you're doing with all of your current tours, so if someone wanted to book onto one of your tours, that's all done through Intrepid, yeah?
It's sort of done with Intrepid. So you'd book it through me and my mate, Darren. The way that I've started running these tours, we've only officially done one so far because the bloody pandemic hit. But my friend Darren, who I've known since I was a kid, his wife, who retired early, and they set up a travel agency. They got their full on travel agency license just for just a bit of fun, just something to do and, you know, get some deals for themselves and help out their mates. But then they started thinking, oh, maybe we can work with Carl. He's got this following. And so we spoke to a few travel companies, and the one that showed the most interest was Intrepid. And they were like, we can create bespoke itineraries and, you know, and then Carl gets his space for free and stuff. And
happy days.
So we did that for Morocco. And then now we've got tours planned for the next 2-3 years. We've got so many ideas. We're sort of waiting to go and do it. But it's sort of, because there are ways, I know other sort of YouTubers or whatever do tours and they organize everything themselves, but there's a lot more responsibility in organizing for us. Especially with these tours, I'm going to places I've not been to before, so I'd rather go with a company that knows what they're doing. Yeah. If I was to do a tour of New Zealand, I'd happily organize that myself because I know, you know, but if I'm going to... one of the ones we want to do is like Pakistan. Well, I've never been there, so I'll do it with Intrepid, who know what they're doing. But we basically get to go to Intrepid. I look at their, so we might do a tour in Thailand actually in January, because I thought that'd be an interesting one to do because Thailand's so fucking easy to travel, you know.
Yeah.
You don't need a tour, but I was like, well, what value can you get? Like, what else can you learn, right? You know, I've done the full moon party. Let's go and see what other experiences and, you know, you know, we'll still get drunk and have a good time. We're not doing a book reading tour or anything, but like, but just sort of like just see Thailand from a different perspective. And so I just looked, I looked at Intrepid's different Thailand tours, and I said to him, right, I want this bit, that bit, that bit, and that bit, and I want a chill day here and do it in this order. And then they go away and they come back and give me a price for it.
When I went and I did the first solo kind of trip where I went, it was like 6 weeks abroad. I did have a serious regret on not booking in on the likes of like a group tour or a set kind of thing, because I went, oh no, sure, I can just fly there and I can make my itinerary as I go along and stuff like that. What I didn't really take into account, and I think that's something that you do really, really well, is actually the price of excursions, where you're kind of going, oh, I have 6 weeks left. Is doing this tour for like 70 quid, is that going to be good? Is it bad? And then I bottle it. And then 6 weeks down the line, I'm like, I should have did that tour for like 70 euro.
There's times and places for tours, and there's pros and cons, and it depends what you want out of a trip. But like, certainly for somewhere like Egypt and Jordan, where I did just solo backpacking, but I was like, this is a place people traditionally do on tours. I'm going to try it out solo backpacking. And it was easy to do, but it wasn't that great because you're still booking day trips, and the quality of guides would vary so much. And so with Egypt, you look at these amazing temples and whatever and tombs, but you have no idea what the fuck you're looking at. And this guy's trying to explain it to you. And you sort of almost want to go like, right, slow down. Let's pretend that I'm not an expert in Egypt history. Try and explain it to me now. You know?
Yeah.
So it just depends what you want. And they're also good for, they can be good for first time travelers as well. Like if someone wants to do like a big 6 month trip, for example, and they're a bit afraid about starting out, then your first 2 weeks start out with a touring, you know, it can like ease you into it as well. And then also, and then other times people, you know, might just, you know, they're not going to quit their jobs or be in a gap year. They've only got their 2 weeks annual leave. And they just go, fuck it, I just want it taken care of and stuff. So so there's different reasons, but hopefully the thing people realize with us as we do more and more of them, and hopefully what came across to the Morocco one is like, look, you're going to go there and you're going to experience all the stuff. You're going to learn a lot of shit, but we're going to have a fucking good time. Like, we're going to have a laugh. And we had such a good laugh on that trip. And that's what we want. You know, we're sort of calling it Carl Watson Tours, just, you know, no other better name for it, call it what it is. But we just want it to be known as like, you're going to come on this tour and have a fucking great laugh, as well as learning all the stuff and experiencing all the stuff.
Oh, yeah. Like, and that's the thing, is that from watching your videos and stuff like that, that's where I'm at now with it, where I'm like, I'd much rather go with like-minded people and do that, because like I was in an aquarium in the middle of nowhere and a turtle like swam right up to the glass and like stared me in the eyes like I was fucking Aquaman. And I was like, oh, this is amazing. But I was by myself and there was no one there. And I like turned around and there was just some little kid going like, Jesus, that's mad. And I'm like, and it just sort of ruined the vibe, you know, where you're experiencing this yourself. Like, it's a bit shit.
It's nice to share experiences with people, and it's nice to have alone time as well. But it is nice to sort of share. You know, that was the whole theme of my Egypt and Jordan video. It's just like, it was cool being in Wadi Rum by myself, just completely by myself in the middle of nowhere. But it was the same time, after a while, I was like, oh, it'd be nice to speak to someone or have a bit of banter or a bit of a joke. And there's one bit when I was at Petra, actually. I mean, that was kind of nice to do by myself, because I could just take my time and film the shit out of it. You know, put the camera there, get a shot, and not waste anyone else's time. And then I was walking around, and it was one of those times when someone was like, oh, shit, are you Carl Watson? And I was like, yay. And I was like, what are you doing here? And he was on a tour. And I just said to him, do you want to go for a beer tonight? And he went out to see it, and he couldn't make it because they were going out for their final meal that night and stuff like that. But I was just like so desperate to hang out with someone. It was just like,
but you know what? And that's it. Like that's what happens when you're doing these kind of solo tours and stuff, especially like when your tick the box exercise, it doesn't work. It's like book into a hostel and you're like doing all this and stuff. Like, be really manly in front of three Swedish girls, and you just completely throw that out the window. And then you're like, well, I've, like, that's not working. So like, that's the thing. It is. It's very hard when you're doing like the solo trips by yourself and stuff, and like trying to make mates and things like that. And I just think it's a very kind of good icebreaker, is that when you do find something in common with someone straight away, and you can say, oh, do you want to go out for a few beers? Or, we're going to go to see the temples today. And you're like, oh, fuck it, I have nothing to do. Let's go see some temples and all that kind of stuff. Like,
I was, I had on the Vietnam trip, the last solo trip I did. A lot of the times it's, in the video, it's me by myself, because even though I was meeting lots of people at the hostel, Vietnam is one of those countries where some people are going north to south and vice versa, and everyone's on a different schedule. So anytime I got to a place, I was like, right, today I want to do this. No one else wanted to do it because they'd done it the day before. A lot of it is by myself, but it was just, the video was quite tricky to edit, because it's just like, it's just too much of me. So I sort of tried to sort of, anytime I had any clip of anyone else speaking, put it into the video just to break it up.
In regards to your full order then, so you went with the aromatic duck and you went with the Hong Kong pork.
Happy days.
And then just in regards to like your delivery and stuff like that, so how did you order it? Was it like an Uber Eats thing, or does the place...
It's run straight from the store. They have a website. But it's straight from... Basically, because my cousin lived just up the road. So he lived here a while.
Classic.
So I've only lived in Red Hill for like a year and a half. So they recommended the best Chinese and the best, you know, Indian stuff. So I just ordered on the website. Didn't tip the fucker because he was so miserable every time. Like, you get other people who come up this like up the stairs, like, hey man, how you been? How's it going? Chatting and stuff. And this guy's like, Chinese. There you go. All right. Fuck you.
That's exactly it. Like, would you order from this place again?
Yeah, I mean, I've ordered from them before, so the food's great. So I would again.
Nah, but, happy days.
If anyone lives in the Red Hill Rygate area.
Cool, happy days, that's perfect. It makes it a lot easier for me now when I tag them in doing the whole social media stuff, so that's good.
Tag them in social media going, your delivery guy's a miserable bastard.
Do you know what, and here's a funny one, I got in contact with all of the delivery companies, like we have Just Eat, I don't know if you have that over in the UK, but like Just Eat, Deliveroo, Uber Eats, and it was basically like, hey guys, here's the Takeaway Man podcast, we're going to be ordering in takeaway, and we're doing it on Zoom because of the COVID and all this kind of stuff. Any chance you want to be featured on it, or is there anything you want to say about your company or anything like that? Radio silence, didn't hear nothing. And I was like, that's very strange, you know, because it's a cool kind of concept or whatever. So I got in contact with all of these guys and was like, here, the reason why I got in contact with them was because I wanted to buy gift vouchers directly from the company, and then say, okay, here's a €20 gift voucher, here's like a £20 gift voucher for Deliveroo, go order Deliveroo and we can do it that way. But they were just like, nah, you're grand, like, it's all right. So I was just like, okay, so now I just do PayPal and then just leave it completely up to the guest. It's like, if you want to order directly from the company or do any of that stuff, it's completely open, and then we can slate them as much as we want then, because they don't provide a service. So I was like, fuck this.
You never know with just brands. It's always a bit weird. Some of them just want to give you everything.
What has been the most random thing you've been offered now since you've hit like the 100,000 subscribers? Has anyone turned in and gone, we want to do the next Carl Watson fleshlight, or what way is it going to work?
Yeah, so I've had some weird offers. One of them was high-end jewelry. And this is after they say they're a big fan of your channel and follow everything, which they're obviously not. I had someone say, oh, we love your backpacking videos, we think your fans would love our sofas. And it's like, how does that fit into backpacking?
That's weird.
And then there was the best one I ever got offered was ladies' cashmere sweaters.
It's like, what?
It's just, and it's literally one of those emails where you can tell they've written the same email, because the name of your channel's in a different font and color. They just copied and pasted. And it's just, I mean, I just ignore them. I just delete them because I don't want, they're probably just doing some shitty marketing job where they hate the job and they've just been told you have to send out this many emails per day. So you don't want to be a dick back to them. I've had to do that way back in the past. So I don't want to be a dick back to them, but it's tempting to. I think when that sofa one came in when I was out at a pub and I was a bit drunk. So I just replied. And I was just like, how the fuck does this fit into my brand? You know, with traveling and packing light.
Yeah.
And then I realized that I probably shouldn't have done that because he's just some poor bloke just doing a shitty job, just trying to get his career started.
Like, that's the thing. I suppose you could probably flip it and say, oh, yeah, you're going to do the whole couch surfing thing, but you're.
Yeah, I was almost tempted when I bought my flat. I was almost tempted to try and call in every favor ever and just sort of like
see if you can
do a flat tour video and go like, oh, this couch, by the way, you can get 10% off. But I left it.
From your the never-ending DFS sofa sale. Yeah.
Just if I'm going to sell out, just sell out big in one video. And just
I was actually, it was so funny because there's one part, I think it's one of your videos where you kind of cut to the Wayne's World thing and it's just Garth and he has all the Reebok stuff on. Like, I'm not selling out.
That's the thing. It's a lot of content creators and like, you know, influencers. I fucking hate the word influencer, but they want you just to be a human billboard. It's just like, oh, you have followers, therefore sell this product to your audience. Like, I didn't get into this to be a salesman. I got into it to, because I love traveling and I love the creative process of making the videos and I love sharing stories and entertaining people. Yeah. Like, that's it. I didn't get into it to sort of sell you, you know, waterproof jackets or electric toothbrushes or whatever. And, you know, and often as well, it's like, oh, if you do a product review of our travel wash bag, we'll send you 5 free wash bags. It's like, well, okay, they're worth £5 each. So that's £25. So you want me to do half a day's work making a video for £25?
Yeah, that's exactly it.
You know, it's like, that's like, you know, below minimum wage. It's like, how about no? You
know? Look.
It's sort of, and part of my, you know, we talked about earlier, sort of like the thing people respond to in my channel is the fact that I'm honest and stuff. And so why just ruin that brand now by just suddenly selling out and, you know, and just shoving products down people's throats and stuff, you know?
That's why I think the affiliate links things work so well, is because there's so many, like, there's some times where I've been watching these videos on YouTube where I just call bullshit, where I'm like, it can't just be you and it can't just be your phone, because you're standing there with your hands like this and someone's recording and moving around. So clearly there's more than just you and all this kind of stuff. And you're kind of going like, all right, but there's like, if you're recording off your phone, how come there's another camera? You know, like, because it kind of edits in at the same stuff and stuff.
One of the things I always loved about like the, because I was a big influence by like the Long Way Round, Long Way Down and the new Long Way Up series, Ewan McGregor and Charlie Borman. And I love the fact they went, this is our cameraman. This is the crew we're bringing with us. This is how we're making it work. So they didn't, there's another guy who does these travel stuff. I forget his name. He's on TV and he goes on this adventure stuff. He walked like the Himalayas and he's done other things. But he's pretending it's him and this guy, but then you sort of see the two of them walking off or driving off. And it's like, well, who's got the cameras that are just tell us there's a cameraman there. I much prefer you just said there's a cameraman, there's a sound guy, you know, and just be honest about it, because then people know what's real and what's
what the crack is, like
what's not, you know. I guess sometimes, because I'll have that if I'm doing like a bit of a video where I'm hiking and you'll see shots of me hiking from far away, and which is obviously I've put the camera down and just I'm basically doing the hike twice. And then you get someone who's trying to be clever in the comments going, oh, I know what you've done there. It's like, of course you know what I've done there, but it's just, how else am I going to get the shot? You know? Yeah.
And there's absolutely no way that would work in London or Dublin or wherever. You can't just put your camera down, especially the price of these things, man, and stuff like that. Like, You do have to have your buds come in and give you a bit of a dig out and stuff. And you know, when you did like the whole round the world trip, would you have rather to do it in reverse? And would you have flipped? Because so say if you started it off in New York and then went around that way, do you reckon you would have got the right backpacking times for New York?
I think the problem with we had with America, and I sort of talk about this, I guess as a random plug, I talk about this in the upcoming retrospective video. for the sort of the kind of backpacking we were enjoying and the kind of trip we were enjoying, we should have probably not done America and should have just carried on with Central America and finished in Cancun. Have been better, because America doesn't have this big backpacking scene. And it's one of those places I did, like, I've been to America a shit ton of times growing up. So I was like, oh, I don't need to plan it. I know America. But actually, it's a very family tourist, tourism kind of oriented place. And also, I've done the national parks to death. So I was like, let's do the deep south and go to the cities. But the cities are dead during the week because people have just gone about their jobs and their lives. And so it was a couple of weeks in and I was like, right, this planet working, screw it. And because like James is going, oh, America seems shit. I was like, no, mate, America's great. We just, I'm taking you to this part for this reason. But yeah, it's not working out. Screw it. Let's go up here. Let's go to national parks. And then the government shutdown happened and everything shut.
Oh, fuck.
And so we just got stuck on our route. And because if it was in the middle of our trip, we would just move on to the next country.
Yeah, but, yeah.
It was the last country, so with, like, we didn't want to go home, so we just kind of rode out the trip. So it was,
yeah,
we still had fun, like went to random towns, met some cool people, got drunk, had a good time. But it wasn't, you know, all the other countries in the world, you do some incredible experience, like, I don't know, hike a mountain or white water raft or whatever, and then get drunk. Whilst in America, it was just a bit of mini golf, and then and so it was just, it wasn't quite as satisfying. And and it just, it wasn't the same vibe that they were after. I mean, we could easily go back and do that exact same route of LA to New York and plan it better and done and shoot an amazing video and have an amazing time. But just because of where we were, tired and shattered, and we're at the kind of point of the trip where you just need stuff put on a plate. Like, you show up to a hostel and there's a list of activities, but we were showing up to motels and it's just pamphlets for family days out. And
yeah, fuck that.
Well, we get to like one town, we got to Austin in Texas, which was an amazing town. And it did have a hostel and it did have a list of activities, but it's like, oh, it's a cool waterfall, 2 hours drive that way. And we've just been driving for 2 days to get to Austin. Like, oh, fuck. So it just, it was just like the perfect storm of nothing working out. So, so it was like sort of, I think the episode works as a nice finale to the series. I like the end of the episode, and I think
it's great. Yeah.
People watch the whole series all the way through will still enjoy it. But if someone clicks on that episode randomly first, they're going, this is like the weirdest American road trip, but they're not doing anything, you know?
yeah.
A weird one.
Oh, no, definitely. And like, that's one thing that I love about like your videos is that there is that aspect of it, is that like, you are so honest in it, is that you're going to say, this is what happened. You're not going to try spruce it up or do any of that kind of stuff. It's like, you're just kind of going, nothing happened today.
Yeah.
Next day. And you just go to the next day. And I think a lot of people really need to get that. Like, you really do need to understand that, is that like, when you're booking these big, big trips, like, there are going to be days that it's not going to go to plan. You're going to be delayed. You're going to be sitting in such and such a place. Your phone's going to smash into a million pieces and there's nothing you can do. And you just have to just sit in and go with it. Like,
it's also about not setting unrealistic expectations. Like, one of the problems is sort of the rose-tinted Instagram. Like Cowessan Falls is the perfect example. It's this waterfall in the Philippines in the Cebu Island. Like, gorgeous blue water waterfall. And you can go we went canyoning sort of down to it and bigged up on Instagram. And people, the thing that pisses me off, all right, people can angle it so they get the photos so it looks like they're by themselves. But it's the captions that piss me off. It's the caption of, oh, I was just walking through the jungle. I stumbled upon this secret waterfall. What a magical moment. #blessed, living my best life. It's like, secret waterfall. It's fucking signposted. There's a car park, a hotel, a restaurant, and there's a queue of people waiting to get the same photo. So what I like to do is show the queue and show, because what you should be doing is going to Carrington Falls going, I know it's going to be busy. I know it's going to be crowded, but hey, that is still a fucking beautiful waterfall. That's what you should be doing. But if you're expecting to stumble upon this secluded thing, you're going to just get there and go, oh, it's overcrowded. And so you, Instagram will set up the wrong expectations. And so you'll end up being disappointed with something which should actually be blowing your mind, kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, the way you guys do your videos and stuff like that with James is that, like, was that the one where he, it was one of the other guys. Was that the place where he jumped through the hole and he hit his leg off?
That was Jerome. Yeah, that was in Central America. Yeah.
And the same thing with, I don't know why. Like, there was one episode and it was you and you're just having beers and you're watching James try to do a front flip into the...
Oh, yeah. That was in Panama, the Aqua Lounge. Yeah.
And it's just like every time it's just like beers. And then I think you go back to there though, don't you? Did you go back?
So that's what we went back to in the, what we call the Backpackers of the Caribbean trip. That's when I joined James out there and stuff. So we're actually back. That was the first time... It was the first time we ever got recognized from the YouTube channel. Like, we only had, it was just under 4,000 subscribers then. We were back at that, because I always just thought, this is like, you know, early days, like Hong Kong to New York was out. I think Quest for Everest was out, like had a, you know, a few hundred views and few, like 2,000 or 3,000 subscribers. We were back at the same hostel doing the same thing. The start of this trip, and then there's these two girls who are sitting there going, wait a minute, we've seen this, where have we seen this? Because they'd researched Panama and researched this, and they're going, and they'd seen it, and we were like, oh my god. And so that was the first time that sort of that had ever happened, which was it was so fucking cool. I remember before we got on the boat trip through the San Blas Islands, I was 25 subscribers off 4,000. And it's me, James, and our mate Andy, this other guy, Martin, who's going to be on the boat. And only the four of us at this hostel bar in this tiny place. And they said, oh, if I hit 4,000 tonight, I'll buy us a round of tequilas. And so they all just messaged their mates and to hit 4,000. No, and then I went to the barman, and this barman's run by some American dude. And I went, oh, how much is a shot of tequila? And he went, $5. I was like, what? Because I was like, it's a dollar for a shot of tequila. And he's like, where have you paid that? I went, every bar in Panama.
Yeah.
I went, sorry, mate, it's $5. So I went back to the guys. I went, he's trying to charge $5. And they went, fuck it. And they said, oh, Carl, spend $15 on a bottle tomorrow.
We'll have it.
But then we actually got on well with the bar and we started chatting away. Then he started giving us free tequilas anyway. But then it became a tradition. Anytime I hit 1,000 subscribers, have a shot of tequila. Like,
oh, cool.
I haven't kept up with that now because it's
yeah, I was gonna say, like,
what? It's at 140,000 now. So.
No way. Holy shit, man.
So I don't do that every time. But yeah.
140,000 subscribers, man. That's amazing.
It's weird. It's sort of because two points. One, I think when it was about 80,000 and I was out with one of my mates. Like one of my old schoolmates who now lives in London, and like he's like a big hotshot lawyer, and I sat with his lawyer friends, and he was like, "Oh well, Carl's you know, makes videos, but also has a travel channel, and he has this YouTube with like 80,000." And this guy went 80,000. He went, "That's enough people to fill Wembley Stadium." I was like, "I never thought of it that way. That's fucking awesome." but then I had the channel got a big boost during the lockdown because my videos take longer to edit. You know, I did the Vietnam trip January to early February. And then when I got back, I was finishing off the Morocco series. So that came out March when everything was starting to lock down. So by the time my Vietnam series came out was June, and there was no new travel content on YouTube at all. Oh. So it got the same amount of views it would normally get in 1 year, 1 month. And so then it just, the whole thing just shot off. And then off the back of that, everyone started binge watching the other channels. So like, it, the channel this year went from like 80,000 to 140 just because of,
fuck,
you know, so like there's some silver linings to a global pandemic. I mean, sure, there's all the deaths and economic distress.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I've got some more subscribers. So. Weigh it up.
Ah, big time. Like, but that's it. Like when I was going in, like my thing now is I don't know if you kind of feel the same about it, is that I'm at the stage where I'm like, right, I have to, here's the apartment and all that kind of stuff. I'm like, could I rent out the apartment and use that money and work remotely now proper?
Yeah, yeah.
And just constantly be traveling.
Yeah,
and,
yeah,
and do that kind of buzz and make the money from the rent off the apartment. Have, so that will pay throughout all of your accommodation that you need now. And you could do like a month in Thailand, a month in Indonesia,
yeah,
or whatever, Philippines, and do all that kind of stuff. And then just use your rent money that you're making from your one house to then travel indefinitely. You know, have you ever decided to do that? Because that's my buzz. That's where I'm at now.
That's the thing of, like, I've been asked about a lot and I've thought about a lot, but I like the idea of having a base and coming back to, and I like how sort of personalized my flat is.
Yeah.
So, but also beforehand, until recently, it wouldn't have been, because everyone's like, why don't you edit remotely? It's like trying to, it's different for like, you get digital nomads who are like graphic designers. They've just got to download a few pictures. For me to edit a corporate video, it might be like 3 terabytes of footage. And shit. So even if it's just a 3-minute video, they could have shot a shitload. So working from home in this pandemic, I mean, the first few months, all the work dried up, but everyone adjusted to working from home. And if it's a small, like sometimes I'll just get sent the footage over the internet, but often they'll courier me a hard drive.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But one company's figured out a tech, is this app they use that was created for gaming, but basically I can now use my laptop to control someone else's computer.
Oh, I get you. Yeah.
And edit in real time. And so that now means I could potentially edit anywhere in the world.
Cool.
Which is great, but it's still at the same time, I kind of like, I like the sort of coming, I like having the two lives basically. Mm. So I like go and do the adventure, come back and edit it and do the home life, see my family and friends and go, if I was younger, I'm sure if I was in my early 20s, then I'd be definitely all over the digital nomad lifestyle. But now I like the going back and I like the switching back and forth between the two.
Yeah, that's where I'm at now, because I just turned 30 this year.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, I've noticed like a couple of gray hairs and, and the stuff, and I haven't got my hair cut in years, so I'm the same thing as you. That's why I keep on wearing these hats. I'm kind of going like, well maybe this whole like, maybe living on a beach and selling pineapples on the side could be an idea.
I kind of realized especially after like the Hong Kong to New York trip, I was like, you could easily go traveling for 10 years and just doing bar jobs and whatever and keep yourself going. You could easily do it. But then one day you'll want to go home and then you'll have no job, no money, no savings, no friends, no nothing.
Yeah.
And so that's why I was like, can I figure out a way to sort of get the best of both worlds, which is what I do now, is I like the back and forth, freelance for a bit, go traveling, freelance, go to infinity
and beyond. So the last question that we have here that's on the thing is called Infinity and Beyond. So what does the guest want to promote, and is anyone you want to give a shout out to?
I guess the whole point of this chat is my channel. So I just subscribe to the channel. We're going to be doing a bunch of tours over the next few years, which we'll be announcing in June and July. We're just going to wait till we get like an idea of, and we're going to put the tours for the next few years, we're going to put on sale all at the same time.
Oh, wow.
So it's almost be like a band with tour dates, like going right. These kind of, but just the idea being that it's like, because we want to do Antarctica, we don't want to sort of on a Monday put on like sale turkey, which is cheap, and then on the Tuesday, on sale Antarctica, and people going, oh shit, I wish I saved my money for that. So if you tell everyone what's coming up, they can pick and choose. But yeah, just I guess the main thing, yeah, subscribe to the channel. You know, check out the films there. There's been people supporting my Patreon page, which is great. The nice thing, the Patreon as well, we do these Zoom chats like once a month, and it's rather than like the live Q&As I do on YouTube is just me trying to keep up with random questions over and over. But the Zoom chats is, it's kind of like this, but it's like, you know, 10 of us, and it's more like a hostel rather than
class.
Yeah, you know, just everyone sharing travel stories rather than sort of the Carl Watson show or whatever. It's just people chatting away and we're getting up a good group of friends. So
just your masterclass and your website, because
so on my website, one of the things I built during the pandemic was my website used to just be like a portfolio of here's all the films in one place, but I now have all the budgets and itineraries for most of my trips, and through that are affiliate links where you can book the hostels that I stayed at. Obviously this is making me zero money right now because no one can travel, but it doesn't cost you any extra money by clicking on those links, but I get a small cut of it if you book those hostels. So because I do often get asked how much does the trip cost, so all the breakdowns there, there's even fucking pie charts with the money and stuff, and it's all all the activities, that's all there. And also I do have you're reminding me of the good stuff to shout out here. I do have a masterclass because I get people, I get lots of people send me their travel video going, oh, can you watch it, review it for me? It's like, not to be a dick, but I don't have the time to watch it through. And also it's hard when someone asks you for feedback on one of their travel videos. It's like, well, what level do you want me to feedback on it? Like if this is your first video you've ever made, then it might be like, all right, well done, maybe try this. But, or do you want me to criticize it from like a professional point of view and obliterate it? I leave it alone. But if you want to learn the skills, I've made this masterclass. There's 5.5 hours of video lessons that takes you through, you know, like how to use a camera, how to talk to a camera, how to back up your footage, how to edit, how to use music, how to create the maps, the entire process. The normal price for it is like, I think it's like 450 quid, but this usually on sale for about 295 or something like that. But it's, if you were to pay for an editing course somewhere, it would cost you 300 quid for a day. This is like 300 quid for videos you'll keep for a lifetime, and it's all there. So it's sort of, I know some people look at the price and go, oh, I wanted just to pay a tenner. It's like, well, it's worth more than that. So.
Oh yeah, no, defo. Yeah. I saw that video. There's a video that you put up and it was using Final Cut Pro, and like, even still, it was just, even your, I don't know if it's like an embedded OCD for you. It's just like there's a place for everything and everything in its place. But even when it came down to the likes of like the dates and times and videos and pictures and all that stuff, like you have a very particular way, but it just works really well for that.
Organizing the footage, because it used to be with the old Final Cut, and even the way Adobe Premiere is now another editing software, is it's a lot harder to organize the footage. So it's sort of like, it's like, oh, where's that shot of me at, I don't know, Cowessan Falls? I'd have to double click on that thing and scroll through, double click, and it can take you hours. Whilst with Final Cut, using metadata, you can categorize and break down all your shots. So any shot that you want, you could find immediately.
Yeah.
Because what, when you're editing, you want to be able to stay in the creative flow. It's like, right, I've got, you know, you have bits in editing where you hit a brick wall and you just need to walk away from it and have it, even just go for a piss or something and come back to it later, but or take a day break or whatever. But when you're in the flow, you just want to be able to go like, all right, now I need that shot, now I need this shot, and now I need that. And if you've got it organized, you can find that shot immediately, which is what Final Cut's great at. There's lots of other great parts about that program as well, but the organization stuff is like, if you spend the time at the start to break down your footage by location and date, and then you can basically just highlight the good parts of the clip and then just get to only show you the good parts, so you can just find all the good shots straight away. and it just speeds it up, you know. Yeah. So
and they're the things that you teach in your masterclass, man. Yes. And the reason why you can do your work so goddamn fucking efficiently.
Yeah. So but no, that's yeah, if people want to learn it, it is this like there's a trailer for it on my channel, like so you get an idea of like a 2-minute trailer for the masterclass, you get an idea of it. There's a free class online of how to make the animated maps, but that's it's not the actual lesson from the course. It's like a Zoom call recording of me doing it. But if people, you know, if people are serious about it, then there is a way that they can learn it. Because the danger is that the question I always say to some people say they want to make a video of their travels. But it's like, do you actually want to make the video or do you just want the final product? Because it's very easy to see the final thing going, I wish I had that. Then do they actually want us to put the time and effort into actually making it? That's a different thing. You know, for me, I love it, so it's not a chore. But for other people, if someone else is about to go on holiday and the last second someone said, here's a camera, you have to film it, they'll be like, oh. So it's the main thing you need to ask yourself first is, do you actually want to learn this and do it?
Yeah. Buy my masterclass. But that's the thing. Like it is a pure investment in on yourself and stuff like that. Like especially any of the times that I've been traveling, I've had this thing where I've been like, oh, I'm going to go do this, this and this. And I'm going to record myself like walking up to the hostel and doing this kind of stuff. And then it just gets to a thing like where unless you have that fucking passion and that fire in your belly,
yeah,
you're walking into the hostel and your phone is in your pocket and you just don't care and you just want to go to bed or any of that. Yeah,
people always ask, why doesn't James have a channel? It's like, well, he sees how much work I do and he's like, fuck that, I can't be us, you know. Yeah. And but a good reason for buying my masterclass or doing any other course is people always talk about, well, it's such a crowded market out there with travel YouTubers and travel Instagrammers now and travel bloggers. How do you stand out from the crowd? And I always say, and people always talk about, oh, finding your niche and stuff like that, which is important. But my main advice is, if you want to stand out from the crowd, don't be shit. Because basically, these things, there's no barrier to entry. Anyone can start a YouTube channel, which is great. But it means most of the stuff out there is by people who've don't know how to make videos. Just because you've got a phone that you can press record on, yeah, and yes, you now have a video, doesn't mean you've created something that's entertaining and engaging. Like you can buy a guitar, doesn't mean you know how to play. You can buy a paintbrush, doesn't mean you know how to paint.
Yeah. So
just because you've got a device you can hit record on and then you can press upload, doesn't mean you know how to make a video. So if you take the time to learn the skills by doing a masterclass or any other course, you're going to like put yourself light years ahead.
Yeah.
Of course, of the competition out there. And that's the best way to get started with a YouTube channel or a blog, podcast, whatever, is teach yourself the skills.
Yeah.
And then you'll just because there's just so much, you know, like pretty much I think half the human population have started podcasts in the pandemic.
I know.
Oh, man. You do it right, do it well, you'll just suddenly immediately be above most of the crowd.
Oh, big time, man. Yeah, no, defo, you're 100% right. And that's the reason why I kind of like, I completely understand where you're coming from. And the thing is, what motivated me is that like when I started my original recordings and stuff, I didn't have, so I have like lights now, I have a proper camera, I have a microphone. But when I originally started, I literally just had, it was like, that was my mic, you know, yeah. And now this is my mic. So it's like, so I have like the proper mic and do all that kind of stuff, and then going looking back at like my first episode to where I'm at now recording, it's fucking night and day. But it literally is the investment back into it and learning how to do it, you know.
And the important thing is as well is not to be, even though I'm saying don't be shit, it's also don't be too precious as well, because it's your first video, your first podcast, first whatever, it's never going to be the greatest thing. Just get one done, put it out there, learn from it, go make your next one. And it's always trial and error. But it just, by if you teach yourself the skills, it gives you a massive head start in that trial and error process kind of thing. So.
Oh, big time, man. Yeah, no, 100%, bud, 100%. Well, I think that's it, you know. Thank you so much for being on the podcast. It was absolutely amazing. Nice. And Yeah, I do you know what, man? From chatting to you now, I like, as soon as these tours come up on sale, I'm definitely going to be like the first guy in to buy. So I'm going to be like there with all the rest of the crazy Irish people that you've hung around with for however long.
Great to have you on a tour, but if you're over in London, let me know. And if next time in Ireland, with my mate now, I'll let you know as well and stuff. And we'll get some beers for sure, and it'll be great.
Ah, cool. Cheers, man. Happy days. Thank you so much.
Cheers, mate. All right. Well.